Life is full of what-ifs. Some awesome, like what if AI could fold your laundry? And some, well, less awesome, like what if you have unexpected medical costs? UnitedHealthcare can help get you covered with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. They supplement your primary plan to help you manage out-of-pocket costs. No deductibles, no enrollment periods, and especially no more what-ifs. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hello and welcome to Off the Beat and Track Podcast. I'm your host, I'm Stu Whiffin. It's another week, therefore it's another episode. Today's episode, I sit down with not just gold but platinum selling artist Yella Wolf. Oh, what a chat. I mean, this is real rap royalty. And just looking through, like when I was prepping for this, just going through what he's done and just the people he's worked with, he's just different level. And everything else aside, he's just a super cool guy. Just really nice, super grounded. And we have a lovely chat, which you're about to hear. Before we get on with that chat, just a few thank yous. Thanks to Scribius Pip and everybody at the Distraction Pieces Network. Thank you to 76. And thank you. Thank you lot for supporting the podcast, because this is something that I love doing, and the fact that the fruits of this, you know, you enjoy is such a bonus. And not just that, it also means that it's just kept me sane. It's really kept me focused throughout these last, you know, year or so, which has been a pretty bananas time, right? And to be able to go and, you know, sit at the end of my garden in my little room and switch on Zoom and just have some really lovely chats with some incredibly talented and amazing creative people that I don't think I'd ever have got to sit in a studio with. And so, yeah, you know, if there's been anything good for me that's come out of this very strange time of not being able to do, you know, what I do for a living, it's been getting to have these chats with people and being able to share them and hearing some lovely stuff back from you lot. So thank you. If this is your first time listening to Off the Beaten Track Podcast, well, I don't know where you've been, but there's 300 episodes in the back catalogue. You can hear me talking to Chuck D from Public Enemy. You can hear me talking to Fatboy Slim. You can hear me talking to Tommy Lee and Motley Crue, Foo Fighters. Oh, gosh, Chic. Go and have a look, because there's so many episodes that you can go and have a listen to. And they're all available now for free. If you would like to support the podcast in any other way, I would point you in the direction of Patreon. It's like a kind of crowd supporter thing. And for 79p a month, you get access to weekly shows, radio shows, video episodes, all sorts of stuff. So, well, you can find out about all of this stuff that I've just been talking about at the one-stop shop, www.offthebeatandtrackpodcast.com. Right, I know why you're here, and it's not for me plugging me back catalogue. You're here for today's episode, and it's great. So let's get on with it. Please enjoy Off the Beaten Track Podcast with Yella Wolf. Right, I've got to take a quick break in this podcast because I've got some super exciting news. Off the Beat and Track Podcast is proud to go into partnership with the Cacao Bar from Hotel Chocolat. That's right. The Cacao Bar is not a chocolate bar. It's all the best bits of a chocolate bar put into a really exciting new alcoholic range. That's right. Gin, vodka, and a beautiful range of cream liqueurs. So, one of the big bonuses of this partnership is obviously I'm super thrilled to have Hotel Chocolat working with us, but they sent me a great big box of this stuff. And I'm telling you, it's amazing. Go and check it out, www.hotelchocolat.com, or over on the socials at Hotel Chocolat. But yeah, in the coming months, there's going to be opportunities for you to get involved with competitions with us, to win bottles of stuff. There's loads of exciting things coming soon, and I can't be more happy to say that this podcast is in partnership with the Cacao Bar from Hotel Chocolat. All right, let's get back to the podcast.
It's Off the Beaten Track podcast on the Distraction Pieces Network. With me, Stu Whiffin.
Okay, we're recording. Yellowwolf, how you doing, man?
I'm great, brother. Fucking beautiful day in Nashville, Tennessee. It's finally warming up. It's been cold for a long time, so stoked, man. About to go to the river and go tubing tomorrow with a bunch of fans, so
nice.
It's going to be fun.
So just sort of looking back over the last sort of, you know, year, have you found that as both, you know, as a human being and as a creative, as an artist?
I mean, pretty, it's been a transformation for sure. You know, as a human, that is the word for sure. You know, the heightened social awareness worldwide has been trying at times, but I think overall, like, I'm proud of how most people have handled it, to be honest. You know, after the George Floyd situation, that tragedy, you know, it affected literally the whole globe, you know, and I think we're going to be better for it, you know, and a lot of things obviously still need to be paid attention to and cared for. And, you know, overall, I think people are realizing that, you know, just general human compassion goes a long way, you know. You know, it's just like we need to care about one another, man. You know, I've traveled the globe for a long time, and I was raised in a very open family. You know, my family's a mixed family. I have mixed children. My first wife was black. My wife currently now is black, Fifi Dobson. You know, so I didn't grow up in a world that you know, it wasn't. That kind of mentality wasn't proposed to me. It was shut down and looked down upon it in my family and my crew and how I was raised. So I would say in the South, we were overly prepared. Our people, you know, we were overly prepared for it.
Yeah.
You know, I'm from Alabama, the heart of it, you know. But Alabama, surprisingly, is super progressive, you know. It's probably because we already went through the bullshit. My grandparents, my great grandparents, they went through the hardest of it, you know. So we figured it out pretty early, you know. So, you know, I think that overall we're going to be better for it. And I think it wasn't such a bad thing to set everybody down for a second. Chill out. You know, it just kind of, you know, the quarantine sucked, but at the same time, it was like, everybody chill, you know, just go home. You know, it inadvertently put everyone on pause. Everyone got to reflect. Everyone got to work on themselves, their music, and you know, try to figure things out, really. So, you know,
it's like a,
sometimes with
like a system restore. Like, it literally felt that, like, everything stopped. And, like, even the real simple things, man. It's like, I'd go out for a run, you know, when we first got put in lockdown, and the sky would be blue and there wouldn't be any aeroplanes in the sky. And that's weird. Like, I live right near London. It's like, we're right on a flight path. No aeroplanes. And all of a sudden, people on the other side of the street, walking their dogs and stuff, would wave and say, hey, because they've been starved of that human connection. The minute it went, people were kind of missing that interaction and that basic fundamental human connection. And to also just have no cars on the streets, no planes in the sky, felt like, I don't want to get too hippie, but it felt like the planet was just going, hang on a minute, let's just slow this down and start again. Like, do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, that's I've been noticing the same thing. Like, people are really nice.
Yeah.
You know, like, I just waving. Everybody wants to talk, say what's up, get to know you, you know. Because people are, you know, on edge, no one wants to be assumed to be the enemy, you know. Yeah. They're like, yo, dude, I'm cool. Yo, dude, I'm cool. Yeah. And that's a good energy, I think. People needed to be shook up. And, you know, the system needed to be checked, you know. Things had to be put in order, and they will be, you know. We overcome. That's what we do, you know. And then artistically, man, it was a amazing time for me, you know. Like, I just buckled down and just wrote music, you know. It made me feel like I was a kid again. I literally came back to my house here, built a little studio under my stairs, literally just enough for me to turn around, wrote almost two albums in there. And so I came out swinging, you know. I went straight to the studio and just started stacking up records, you know.
Nice. Well, I'm going to start your playlist now. And for track one, I'm just going to ask you what you regard as the song that has the greatest ever intro.
Say what? What'd you say?
The song that's got the greatest ever intro. So, do you want me to pull up the list that you sent over? Okay.
I remember these questions. These were good questions.
Cool. Yeah. So, can you remember what you put for this one? Do you want me to give you a nudge?
Barracuda.
You went for a track by Heart.
Oh, Heart. Crazy.
Yeah, man.
Crazy on You. Yeah. Yeah. That song, that intro changed the way I thought about an intro. You know, like, it was so left field. And sometimes I'll play that intro and I don't play the rest of the song. I just want to hear that guitar piece, you know. So I just think it's the most creative left field thing that was happening at that moment. And, you know, because I grew up, my mom was 16 when I was born. I was born in 79, so I grew up with all the 60s and 70s music and 70s rock and roll and shit. So that was a constant in my house. So, you know, we were listening to that record when it just came out. You know, Heart was one of my mom's favorite bands. So, it just stuck with me for the rest of my life, really. So I think the greatest intro still today.
And all of so much of that music that come out in that period would have these sort of epic intros. And, you know, and it would take a while before, you know, you'd get to a chorus. And I just want to ask you, as an artist now, how you approach songwriting. And do you take into consideration the fact that lots of people's attention spans and the way they consume music now is different to maybe how it was 10 years ago? The thumbs seem to swipe a little bit quicker and the attention spans maybe getting slightly, you know, shorter. Do you try and grab them right from the off now, or, you know, do you still kind of approach it in a more sort of traditional way of, like, the song will get where it needs to go when it gets there?
Yeah, I just take it song for song, and I don't define it. I don't like put parameters on how I'm going to create a record based on how I think people are going to digest it.
Yeah.
I just do, you know, like, so, and hip hop is sometimes, well, all the time, really, it's unpredictable in how it's going to go. Maybe it's just 3 minutes of one long verse. Maybe it's verse, hook, verse, hook, verse, hook. Maybe it's just two hooks. Maybe it's whatever. It can be whatever, you know. Music in general can be whatever, but hip hop especially, it can be really simple. You know, when I started writing hip hop records, you know, especially within the industry, I remember when I first got signed, it was almost law that they wanted every song to be 3 minutes and 30 seconds.
Oh, really?
Yeah. 3 minutes, 30 seconds, 3 minutes, 30 seconds, 3 minutes, 30 seconds. Cause that was the radio length. You know what I mean? So I did learn how to time that. And I learned how to structure songs that way. But when I'm making an album, a studio album, I definitely do not think about that, you know.
Yeah.
I've made the mistake of my first freshman album with Interscope Shady I hit my head pretty hard with having to deal with other writers and other producers that were trying to make a single. You know what I'm saying? And it took, after that record, I feel like it's taken me this past 6 years to rebuild a more artistic credibility that I was seeking.
Yeah.
With the balance of being able to give people a record that they could digest, but still satisfy my own creativity, you know?
Absolutely.
So I've never been one to just bend and do what people expect, because, you know, fans never know what they want until they hear it.
Yeah, definitely.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
For track two, I'm going to take you back and ask you to tell me the first song you remember hearing that had an emotional impact on you. Do you want me to give you a shout on this?
Was it a Fleetwood Mac record?
Yeah, man.
And it was Landslide.
Yeah, mate.
That record, I get chills right now just thinking about that song, man. It's such a, it just reminds me of my mom. I grew up with a single mom. So that record, watching my mother go through so many relationships, you know, seeking, you know, trying to dealing with her dad, her father issues, and trying to fill that gap. I just feel like Stevie Nicks and my mom, you know, it felt like when I hear that, I feel like they're kindred spirits or something, you know, like, or they lived a similar life. And it's, the song's bittersweet, you know, it's like the woman's strength and showing her independence, and she will make it, but still she's like talking about how hard it is to grow up and grow older without ever really figuring it out. You know what I mean? And my mom's still searching to this day. You know what I mean? So that song, it means a lot to me. It's my relationship with my mother and growing up. That's where that song hits me. And I remember hearing it even super young. I got choked up listening to it because I was just thinking about mom.
If you had to sort of pinpoint the emotion, what would you say the emotion is?
It's sad, really.
Yeah.
But it's kind of, it's sad and sort of in a therapeutic way, you know? Sometimes you need to hear something that takes you to a place where you can let things go.
Yeah.
You know?
How are you with... Like, if you wake up and you're having a, you know, a low day, you're feeling a bit low, like, do you reach for something upbeat to listen to, or will you immerse that emotion and listen to something, you know, that feels right with it and just process it and work through it?
Yeah, that's definitely what I do. If it's dark and gloomy and I'm having a one of them days, then I'll definitely feed that vibe and try to figure it out.
Yeah.
You know, whether music or a movie, because pushing things down has never worked for me. You know, eventually it's going to boil over and if I don't handle it, you know, I've noticed in the past, if I don't handle it, you know, a couple weeks later, I'm at a bar, you know, and all of a sudden, oh yeah, well, what about, you know what I mean? And I just go straight to handle it when I should have, you know? So I just try to get it over with. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that's a healthy way to do it. Don't run from it. Just try to process it.
For track three, I'm going to ask you for the song that reminds you of your time at school. And I mean, the song is pretty significant as well in regards to, you know, the whole process. yeah, man.
Brick in the wall. It's great. I'm remembering all this, you know, it's pretty crazy. Yeah, Brick in the Wall was, I didn't hear that. I didn't really process that record till I got out of school. We listened to Pink Floyd growing up, but maybe, I don't know, for some reason I just wasn't gravitating toward it until I got a little older, because I left school in, you know, ninth grade, man, you know, like literally, like just walked out, grabbed my skateboard and left home. I was like 15 or 16. And all my teachers growing up, but I went to 15 different schools.
15?
Yeah, 15.
That's insane, man.
Yeah. Well, my mom was just a, you know, she was a gypsy, you know, running around just looking for it, you know, always, you know, flipping jobs. She was a hustler, man. So, we would just move around and just figuring it out, taking our steps. But throughout that, you know, it was three or four schools in, I just stopped caring about fitting in, you know? And, there was maybe one or two teachers within that whole time that I connected with. And I didn't connect with them, about school itself. I connected with them about just life, you know?
Yeah.
So I just wasn't, the school just wasn't for me, you know? So I can relate to just, you know, in a lot of cases, just being more wise in life, maybe not as educated as some of these people, but just being more wise at a younger age than some of them. And, you know, so in that way I can really, really relate to that record, you know? So that's the record that reminds me of my school, you know, my life in school, public schools and suspensions and paddlings. You know, I used to get paddled. I don't know if y'all got paddled over there,
man,
but they paddled south, like big wooden paddles, you know, yeah, take you in the hallway and whoop that ass.
So going to so many different schools and, you know, constantly being the new kid, like, did that give you, you know, after say four or five times this, did you start to develop confidence? You know, was you a confident kid?
Yes, super confident. I started skateboarding when I was 7 years old, you know, and through skateboard videos and the music that was coming through skateboard videos, which was hip hop, gangster rap shit, heavy metal, punk rock, and even outlaw country, I was getting a wealth of that through videos. And I was learning a wealth about fashion, and I was learning a wealth about graphics and art and, you know, stories and reading through magazines. And then if you match all that with my travels and running through the streets of Atlanta up to New York, to California, down to Florida, and just immersing myself in that culture, matched with my mother's history with, you know, my mom was married to Randy Travis, his stage manager for 7 years, and her long-term boyfriend before that was Aerosmith's light and sound guy, 10,000 Maniacs, fucking Ted Nugent, REO Speedwagon, like a bunch of rock bands. So like there was like a wealth of culture that was coming through my door. So I did get to the point around 12, 13, where I was a complete individual. I would come to school in clothes that everybody thought I was nuts. But you know, I just didn't care anymore. And that's pretty much stuck with me.
It's so interesting you say that about skate videos. And in the UK, like for me, in the kind of early to mid 90s, like we found out about the American bands that we couldn't hear about over here on skate videos. That's where we found out about our music. It was always skate videos. And it was so important in the UK that these VHS tapes would be passed around, or you could get them from like markets in North London if you went up there, and you could just get this kind of little bootleg VHS, and it would be like gold dust being passed around your school or your college just to see like the skate vids from the States. But the minute you put it on, you'd be like, who's this song? Who's this song? Who's this by? And it was like so important, man. So important.
Yeah. Especially like, namely the 411 tapes. All the 411 tapes were probably the most like diverse musically. A lot of skateboard videos have some sort of music theme throughout. 411 was like a mixtape. You know, you got a bunch of new skateboarders that you've never seen before, and everybody had a weird, different record, you know? So, yeah. And, you know, again, back then, too, was just like the mixtape game was huge out in the States, too. So you could go to a record store and pick up a DJ SNS tape that would just put you on all the underground shit. And so, yeah, man, you know, you got to imagine me going to school at like eighth grade in the middle of Alabama, surrounded by rednecks, but I'm listening to Group Home and Mobb Deep and Poor Righteous Teachers and, you know what I'm saying, like Sex Pistols and fucking, you know, whatever, you know, just on it. And no one knew what was going on, you know. Yeah. No one knew about the music I was listening to. And I attribute all that through that skateboarding, yeah. You know?
Listen up. I've only got another new sponsor, Egg Fried. It's this super cool clothing label. And if you're into sort of skating and street art and gigging and kind of like really cool art and throwing a little bit of Asian culture and the designer's kind of weird sense of humor in the mix, then you're pretty much there with the wonderful world that is eggfried.com. Now, they do these amazing punchy kind of graphic tees, hoodies and sweatshirts, beautiful art prints, as well as this. They have a denim range, all handmade in-house, all supporting the slow fashion movement. Not only that, they've given you a discount code, 10% off when you head over to eggfried.com. Just use the code EGGSALAD, EGGSALAD, save 10%. Go and get lost in the world of Egg Fried. Also, they've got a new kids range, and it's called Small Fried, and it's super cool, super cute. And again, it's all over there in this wonderful world. Go and get involved at eggfried.com. I mean, you touched on record stores then, and for track four. You said that this was a tricky one to answer, and you've not sent me an answer in advance, so I'm curious as to what where you could be going with this. But for track four, I'm going to ask you for the first song you remember buying from a record store.
Oh, because I didn't buy my first record. And it is this, the story behind that is my grandmother. When my grandmother knew that I was getting heavy into music, she got me, She got me Del the Funky Homo Sapiens, a Del the Funky Homo Sapiens record, his first full length album. She got me Onyx, Back the Fuck Up, my grandmother now. And then she got me America K's Most Wanted.
I mean, that's the coolest grandmother on the planet, right?
Rap, and she, and they all had parental advisory. And, you know, my mom at the time, she was just a rock and roller. I mean, she knew that I was into it, but, you know, she was doing her own thing. But my grandmother was like, I got you, you know, so that was in my stocking, you know. So, but before that, I had never purchased a record, but those were my first tapes, my actual tapes. Now, I had like, and before that, I had stacks of vinyls that were like gifted to me, like some Led Zeppelin vinyl, a whole old collection of Elvis discography. But I didn't even have a record player. You know, I had this whole collection of vinyl. I never could even listen to them. But yeah, those were my first tapes. So
would you?
That's why the question was hard to answer.
With them records that you had that you couldn't play, would you look at the sleeves? Because it was just something that you said about skating as well, that, you know, you got that visual for design and stuff like that. And for me, I know that, you know, when I was growing up listening to, you know, my favourite records, if I put that piece of vinyl on, when I listened to it, I'd sit there and just stare at the sleeve. And, like, you know, was that kind of making its way, like the kind of visual side of you know, of artwork for records and stuff?
Man, I mean, that's a really good question. Looking at literally thousands of skateboard graphics and thousands of ads and the way that that industry was really, and still is, probably 5, sometimes 10 years ahead of the curve with a new fashion wave that's coming through. I saw that early. I saw, like, you know, my first like piece of, I was obsessed over Bones Brigade. I had Bones Brigade sweatpants. Again, my grandmother got me this Bones Brigade sweatsuit with the skulls down the side. And I had a Steve Caballero complete with the black Caballero with the red bats and the gold dragon, some green slime ball wheels, and some independents. And all these were really, really strong brands that were really driven by ill graphics. So between that and like great record sleeves, well, it actually made me picky, you know, about record sleeves. Like, oh, that's terrible, you know?
Yeah.
You know, like, that's a really bad cover, you know? So I think that, again, so much of that played into who I, you know, grew to be, you know, like before I even recorded my first record, I had a clothing line I started called Alabama Slanguage. I was printing and designing shirts and selling them out of the trunk of my car out in Alabama. So I've always, you know, I was painting also big city murals, like entire blocks. I painted a fucking 40-foot Allen Iverson inside of a church, you know, like, so I actually thought that was going to be my leading career.
Yeah.
Was going to be design or painting or something like that, you know. Now I've implemented that into Slamerican. But yeah, man, I've always had a passion for design, and for sure covers and graphics and again, magazines, you know.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Mother's Day is just around the corner, and it's time to pamper the special moms in your life. And what better way than with Osea's limited edition skincare sets featuring clean, vegan, cruelty-free products that are safe for your skin and the planet.
Osea is a women-founded, women-led brand that's been making seaweed-infused products for nearly 30 years. This Mother's Day, Osea has two limited edition sets, perfect for gifting or keeping for yourself. Their Golden Glow body set includes three clinically proven bestsellers for silky, smooth, glowing skin, while the Glow and Go facial set has everything she needs to achieve spa-level results at home. They're so beautiful, you can skip the wrapping. For a limited time, you can save up to $48 on Osea sets, plus get free shipping. That's Mother's Day made easy. Pamper the moms in your life and get 10% off your first order site-wide with code MOM at OseaMalibu.com. That's OseaMalibu.com, code MOM.
That gave me a good eye, I believe, you know?
I mean, the industries that you've chosen to pursue, whether that be music or fashion, both two of the most competitive industries on the planet. And I know I asked you earlier about confidence, but I mean, it's a ridiculous question to ask, but you don't struggle with drive, right? I take it you're a driven person.
Man, too much, man. Like, I've had to learn how to delegate all my ideas. You know what I mean?
Is that tough?
What the tough part is just trusting people to do it right. That's been the big one, you know. Like, Slamerican has become somewhat of an idea or idealism and an expression of culture, and it extends now to bike builders, tattoo artists, you know, music enthusiasts, skaters, bikers. People are driven by fashion, boot collectors, hat makers, jewelry makers. Like, it's a whole thing now, you know? So, we're just taking steps to just, create that in-house and put our stamp on it and put our spin on it, you know? But yeah, super driven. I mean, we'll be six albums deep by August. Yeah. And just here, you know, so plus a clothing brand and, you know, the shows, the live shows, and plus Creekwater Whiskey. And they got a whiskey brand too. So
you get time to sleep, man.
Oh man, I have to make time, actually. Yeah, I got to make.
Okay, well, for track five, I'm going to move things forward a little bit, and I'm going to ask you to tell me the song that soundtracked your year's clubbing.
Who run it? 3-6 Mafia?
I think that was it.
Yeah.
Yeah. No. I've got... Oh, hang on. That could be for the next one, actually.
For the club?
Yeah. I've got the Highwaymen.
Oh, for years of clubbing, I think it was Who Run It. If you're talking about my life or for my career, like me touring and shit like that.
Yeah.
The theme song, touring and stuff. Yeah, that was Highwaymen. So Love Story, my album Love Story, was like a real pivotal moment in my career. You know, I was finally let loose to do whatever I wanted to do. You know, I had earned that within my relationship with Interscope and Shady. And they were like, look, man, just go make a record. You know, we're not going to bother you anymore, basically, you know? And I was like, perfect. Let's go, you know? And there were so many records I had recorded years before. Like, I had a full band before I ever recorded Trump Music, you know? And I was traveling around Atlanta doing this experimental country, rock, hip hop music. And we were doing really well, but we couldn't get a deal for it. You know, everybody was turning us down. Like, I remember specifically L.A. Reid, DJ Khaled, and Lil Wayne came to one of our sold out shows in Atlanta. This is before Trump Music. And saw us perform with our live band, and they're just like, this is cool, but we don't know what to fucking do with this, you know? So my my manager at the time, management team, basically was like, look, man, do a rap record and we'll get you. If we can't get you a deal, you can walk. So that's when I went back to my little house in the hood and I did Trump Music. And sure enough, we were able to get a situation for it. So since Trump Music, I was trying to push back into this idea of this music that I was creating before. And Love Story was that me opening that gate.
Yeah.
And so the reason Highwayman became the theme song is because we played it every night before every show for years on Love Story. I think it's like, it's that the song is about rebirth.
Yeah.
And living forever, not knowing what you're going to come back as, but knowing that you're coming back. And that's, I believe in that, one, in real life. And two, it was like, metaphorically, it was perfect for my rebirth coming back with Love Story. Because for sure it was a reset button for my career.
Just, I mean, you say you listen to that before you go on stage. Just give me a little kind of insight as to them 5 minutes before you walk out onto a stage. What's the routine?
Well, that could vary. On a good night, we're sitting back there fucking throwing ping pong balls into shot glasses and, you know what I'm saying? And talking shit and just getting hype and jumping around. You know, on a not so good night, I'm fucking stressed out. I'm just leave me alone for about 20 minutes. I need quiet. So if my anxiety is too high, I've like passed out, you know what I mean? Like passed out with anxiety, just like falling dead asleep with in obnoxious loud club noise and shit. You know that I don't think walking on stage has ever been the same twice, but, I guess that's the consistency of the record. You know what I'm saying? Like, at least the song's playing.
Yeah.
Some sort of normality, I guess.
Well, for track six, I'm going to take you home and ask for a favorite song from an artist from your home county, please.
That would be Shawty Fat. And that would be his one verse on Getaway. Shawty Fat was my favorite rapper slash artist slash human, you know, and I was so lucky to get to know him, and my family fell in love with him. My mother, my grandmother, he was just a light, man. And he had one verse on Radioactive. It was Shawty Fat, myself, and Mystical. And, you know, Mystical 3-6 Mafia was my first, like, gangster rap show, too. So to have Shawty Fat on that record with Mystical was a big moment for me. Because Shawty Fat was my first biggest supporter. Like, he would take me around the streets, put me in, carry me around the projects, take me to, you know, the crazy clubs, all the Chitlin Circuit clubs, you know, there was no white people around, you know, and he would just throw me in like, get him, dude, go, you know, you got it. And, he's always had my back. So I wanted the most for him. But he said so much in that verse. I just felt like he said a lifetime's worth of music in one verse, which was the magic of his simplicity. I remember seeing that it Will Get Loud with Jack White, and he's playing the guitar and he plays this record, and it's an old blues record. There's one guitar, one person, one mic, that's it. And he said, that's all I'm trying to do. That's all I've ever wanted to do was that. I just want to do that. And I get that. Like I that's that simple, the art of the simple but great artists. man, Shoddy Fat had it, you know. If this was the 30s, 40s, he would be a legendary blues artist, you know. Like, he was just, he just had that thing, man. So, yeah, that's it.
Well, for your last track, I want you to play Tastemaker, please. And I'm going to ask you to tell me a song that you think many people may not know that you would like them to hear.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I remember thinking about this question now. Yeah. Cause I wasn't sure how to answer. Like, well, if it's from my discography, it probably would be Have a Great Flight. But if it's one song that no one has heard in the world that I want them to hear or can't wait for them to hear, it's Jump Out and Let Go. Yeah.
What can people expect from that?
Shooter Jennings and I wrote a rock and roll album and recorded it at Sunset Sound and in California and Prince's Purple Rain Room, the same studio that they did Stairway to Heaven in, and all old analog gear. There's no 808s. There's no rapping. This is all analog, live band, full takes. It's a new sound. I'm sure that, you know, for my core fans that's been following me, I think it's to be expected. I think they've kind of been waiting for it. For some passive fans that they may have just heard a couple rap records that they like, they're not even going to recognize me. And then for new fans, it's going to be like, who the fuck is this? And then when they dig back on my rap shit, they're going to be like, what the fuck? This is the same person. I'm just letting go of, I'm just knocking down the walls, man, of my singing and songwriting and my love for rock and roll and just finally taking it there. I mean, Shooter and I have been talking about this for probably 8 years, you know, and we finally had an opportunity to do it. And I can't wait for people to hear the album. And that's just one of the songs that I can't wait for them to hear.
Well, we put together a Spotify playlist to accompany the podcast with all the tracks that we've spoken about that are available on there. As we find ourselves coming out of, a real shitty situation that we've been in for the last year or so, and we've, you know, looking towards a bit more of an optimistic 2021, what are you looking forward to personally and what's happening professionally?
I'm looking forward to, you know, the global awakening, you know, like I'm looking forward to people discovering their own power, for people to discover that they're truly capable of anything that they dream of. If they just focus, I think that I feel like that's what's happening now. And I got hope, you know, like, well, actually hope is not even the word. I know for sure that that's what's happening. I'm confident that we're going to be a better planet, you know, and it is what it is now. You know, we can't just speak for our state, for our country anymore. We're all connected now, man. So we all have to, we got to figure it out, and we will. But personally, you know, for me and my career and my family, I feel extremely fortunate and blessed. And I'm just going to keep pushing, man. I'm taking it day by day. Lots of big visions, lots of big dreams to accomplish still. And, I wish for everybody success and love and support.
Man, thanks so much for your time today. It's been a real pleasure talking records with you, man.
Yeah, you too, man. I appreciate it. It's a great interview.
Oh, man, thanks loads. You have a lovely day, man.
All right, you too, brother.
Take it easy, man.
Later.
There you go. Ah, Man, that was amazing. Like, me, I wasn't amazing, but Yellow Wolf was. Like, just freaks me out that just through sitting at this little space at the end of my garden, I get to have these chats with, you know, these absolute superstars. And, yeah, and it's just so, it's so nice when, you know, they jump on the screen and they're like, hey, how you doing? And you think, oh, yeah. Aside from all of that stuff, you're just normal people and you're just skin and bone and you're just a nice person. And, yeah, what more do you want, you know, in these recent times than just to hear a conversation with a nice person talking about positive stuff and talking about, you know, the fruits of their labour and that journey and, you know, their creative process. It's, yeah, it's lovely to hear. And the fact that you lot are here listening is delightful. So thank you. Okay. As mentioned at the beginning, go check out the back catalogue because there's hundreds of episodes there now that you can go and explore. And yeah, and if you'd like to support the podcast, then you can do so on the Acast app, on the bio to this, or you can go and sign up to the Patreon, which is 79p a month. And you get a whole load of bang for your buck and access to another few hundred episodes that have never been released to the public. And you can find out all about it at www.offthebeatandtrackpodcast.com. Right, I'm done. I'm all talked out. Have a lovely week, people. Stay safe. Be excellent to each other. And I'll see you next time. Bye-bye.
It's Off the Beat and Track Podcast on the Distraction Pieces Network. Keep me, Stu, with him.